This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The prosecutor in the Lindsay Clancy trial asked Patrick Clancy on the stand to describe his children. And he had to stop and take a breath before he could get through it. Cora was into princesses. She had lots of friends. She just liked taking care of people. Dawson liked trucks and firefighters and Paw Patrol. Callan was 8 months old. And his father told the courtroom he was just a happy baby. Patrick Clancy said all of that out loud in Plymouth Superior Court, the witness stand, as a witness for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. His former wife sat at the defense table across the room sobbing. Then the same prosecutor picked up a plastic bag full of that woman's pill bottles and asked him whether he knew how many pills were missing. Lindsay Clancy is charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Cora Dawson and Callan in the family's home in Duxbury on January 24th of 2023. She doesn't dispute that she killed them. Her attorney, Kevin Reddington, said so in his opening statement in front of the jury on the record. So this isn't a case about who did it. It's a case about whether she can be held criminally responsible for doing it, which is a different question and a much harder one. If the jury finds she wasn't criminally responsible, she doesn't walk out the front door of that courthouse. She goes to a state mental hospital facility, or back to one, really, and doctors decide periodically whether she's ever safe to leave. That's where she wants to be. That's what she's requested all along, to be locked in a mental facility for the rest of her life. 12 women and 6 men are going to make that decision. The judge told them to plan on 6 to 8 weeks in a witness list running to nearly 200 names. Assistant District Attorney Shannon Buckingham opened by telling those jurors exactly what kind of person she believes they're looking at. Controlling, meticulous, manipulative, not a woman in the throes of psychosis, Buckingham said, but a woman who acted intentionally, rationally, and swiftly, despite there being no actual evidence for that. Then she told those jurors one more thing. This isn't a public debate about women's mental health and how the medical system treats women, she said. This case is about this defendant. No, it's actually 1,000% about that, because the actions that defendant took are directly corresponding, connected, related to, connected at the hip to women's mental health and how the medical system treated this specific woman and countless others out there. So again, you're wrong on that little factor. Miss Prosecutor. There's a number Patrick Clancy gave investigators that explains why he later hired a lawyer and sued his wife's doctors. The Commonwealth's very first witness was the father of the 3 children. Prosecutor Jennifer Sprague walked him through the marriage, the 3 pregnancies, the maternity leaves, the babysitters, and the anxiety that showed up every time Lindsay had to go back to her job as a labor and delivery nurse. Then Sprague entered a bag holding 9 prescription bottles into evidence and started reading him the counts. 7 pills gone from Zoloft prescription filled in September of 22, 6 out of 30 gone from an Ativan prescription filled in October of 26, then a bottle with 2 pills gone, a bottle with 3, a bottle nobody had opened at all. Then there were a lot of pills prescribed, the prosecutor said, but not a lot of pills taken, correct? He answered no. I think the context is important. He pointed out there had been dosage adjustments made. On the rest of it, he was blunt. He wasn't keeping track of the number of pills taken out of each bottle. The argument the state is making with that bag is straightforward enough. You can't blame the medication for what happened if you weren't swallowing the medication. But she was taking the medication. Not as prescribed. I don't know that helps your argument of her being in control if she's taking medication, on and off medication, having been misdiagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder when she was really suffering from bipolar 1 and postpartum psychosis. And they were mixing a cocktail of medicines willy-nilly in the mix from a brain that is telling her, don't take this, and hearing voices saying, kill your children. Yeah, you know, you're not going to get exactly the greatest decision-making power going on here. And you're the one that has to argue that she had great decision-making power here. What are you arguing, state? What are you arguing? But look at what's actually in the bag. 9 bottles came out of roughly 4 months. They were written by more than one prescriber, and almost nothing was gone out of some of them. That doesn't show you a patient ignoring her doctor. It shows you a lot of prescriptions going out the door and nobody adding them up. Her husband wasn't counting pills because it never occurred to him that counting pills was his job. He assumed somebody with a license was doing that. Both of these lawyers are going to want that bag in front of the jury during closing arguments, and they're going to be pointing at the same 9 bottles for opposite reasons. The Commonwealth isn't improvising here. They walked in with a clock. At 4:02 in the afternoon on January 24th, 23, according to court documents prosecutors have filed, Lindsay Clancy searched her home or her phone for kids' Miralax. 11 minutes later, she searched takeout, 3V, a reference to 3V, a restaurant in Plymouth. Then prosecutors say she opened Apple Maps and calculated how long the drive from the house in Duxbury to that restaurant would take. At 4:47, she called a CVS in Kingston and asked whether they had children's Miralax in stock. They didn't. The manager who took the call later told investigators she didn't slow her words and didn't sound impaired in any way. And you know what? People going through psychosis don't! They don't sound that way. That's what the movies tell you. That's what a bullshit attorney tells you who wants you to think one way. Well, were they sounding impaired? Were they No, people with active psychosis, a lot of times they look and sound completely fucking normal. That's how they're able to pull off the shit they're able to pull off, and nobody can tell until it's too late. And she wasn't dressed like a clown and singing show tunes either. Again, I mean, it's rather just sad that we're in this state that people think that someone in a state of psychosis is going to be slurring their words and actively acting impaired. If you're like, well, they wouldn't. You have a lot to learn about psychosis then. You know, there was a point in my life before I educated myself on some of this where I probably would have thought the same thing. Like, well, she's not acting crazy. You don't know what acting crazy is like. Acting crazy is not the clown sideshow that folks think it might be. Oh, if it only was, trust me, we'd be able to like shut it down a lot quicker. Unfortunately, crazy is insidious. Psychosis can be insidious, meaning you don't know it's there until it's too late. At 4:53, she texted the basement. Any chance you want to do takeout from 3V? I didn't cook anything. It's been a long day. Patrick testified they'd eaten at 3V before, but had never once ordered takeout from it. Woo, that's a big point. When you're arguing about the frequency of takeout and you're the prosecution, you don't have much of a case. When they did takeout, he said it came from one of two places closer to the house, usually. Buckingham told the jury he left around 5:15 to pick up the food and grab the medicine at CVS for Cora and then delivered the line. She wants those 18 people carrying around for the next 2 months. That's when the clock starts, ladies and gentlemen. That's when the clock starts, ladies and gentlemen. It goes further than the clock. He testified that at a wedding in New Hampshire in September of 2022, Lindsay told him she was thinking about asking a doctor for Zoloft. The prosecutor established that she had already had the prescription filled the day before the conversation happened. And he only learned that later. There's also an item in the browsing history of a tablet the two of them shared, dated August of 2022, months before any of these prescriptions existed. Said he didn't recall clicking it. That's the premeditation case. That she wanted to get Zoloft, and she told her husband, I'm thinking about asking a doctor for it. But she already asked her doctor for it. Okay. And She was being dishonest. She was being scared of talking about it out loud. She was afraid of being judged at that moment in time for wanting. Yeah, that's pretty fucking normal for a lot of people. Unfortunately. And people in these sort of states of mind, they're rather sensitive to judgment. And then things get held back. So I don't know what they're trying to prove there, but I guess it's probably, oh, she was untruthful, or I don't know. I'm sure you could probably find a lots of ways people are untruthful in their relationships. The state got one more thing out of Patrick that afternoon. It was a single sentence, and both of the lawyers are going to fight over it until the jury goes out. The other half of Buckingham's opening was basically a slideshow. She showed the jury photographs and video of a woman who looked like she was doing fine. The Museum of Science, a water park down on Cape Cod, cutting down a Christmas tree in November, Cora's fifth birthday party at a place in Plymouth, text threads full of pictures of kids playing in the snow. On direct examination under the state's own questions, Patrick agreed that Lindsay was always able to interact with her children, including at the museum. This isn't some mysterious wonderment that's going on here. Then the same prosecutor asked the same man about Thanksgiving at his sister's house. He said she was in rough shape. She wasn't talking much, low energy, really depressed. He remembered his sister-in-law giving her a big hug when she walked out the door. Both of those answers came out of the same man on the same day, and neither one is a lie. The trouble with using she looked fine as proof of anything is that she looked fine to everybody. She looked fine at the tree farm. She looked fine in the text messages. And she looked fine, apparently, to a rotating cast of licensed professionals who kept writing prescriptions. A photograph of a woman going down a slide with her daughter proves that she went down a slide with her daughter. It's not a psychiatric evaluation, and it never was. So both sides get the bag. The state holds it up and sees a woman who wouldn't take her medicine. The defense holds up that same bag and sees prescriptions written by people who weren't talking to each other. It's the same 9 bottles either way. In January 2026, Patrick Clancy filed a wrongful death and malpractice complaint in Norfolk Superior Court against his wife's psychiatrist, her nurse practitioner, and the two practices that employed them. That complaint says her appointments with the psychiatrist ran 17 minutes each. That isn't the intake visit, that's the standing appointment. It also alleges those visits were video calls and that the psychiatrist never once sat in a room with her. The complaint describes a 10-minute follow-up call in January that ended with another prescription. It describes a 17-minute appointment after that and another prescription, and it says her final appointment ran 17 minutes on January 23rd, 2023, and ended with her dosage going up. The next day, all three of her children were dead. According to the same filing, across 4 months of roughly a dozen prescriptions, nobody ever ordered a blood test to see how her body was actually metabolizing any of it. Those are allegations in a lawsuit, not findings. The providers haven't conceded them, and none of it has been tested in front of a jury, but it's why a man who lost all three of his kids went out and sued the people who were supposed to be treating their mother. He gave a different number from the witness stand. He testified that he called Lindsay's parents and asked them to come up, and that he asked his own wife who her doctor even was, because he was concerned. She'd been prescribed 10 different medications in just over 2 months. He said it didn't make sense to him. He works in tech. He was running his job out of a finished basement with 3 kids over his head, and he's the one who noticed. He noticed the telehealth appointments were quick, and there wasn't a lot of attention being paid. So when the next one was scheduled remotely, he refused. It has to be in person, he told her. He's the one who handed the district attorney's office a printout form from CVS, listing every prescription she filed from September through January. He had a second bag of her discontinued medications riding around in the console of his truck because a nurse practitioner told him a police station would dispose of them, and he never got around to dropping them off. He also described what happened every time she went looking for help. In November, she went roughly 48 hours without sleeping, developed heart palpitations, and drove herself to South Shore Hospital. She switched providers looking for someone who specialized in prenatal care or perinatal care. The specialist she found left the office after 4 or 5 days by his count, and she was handed to a nurse practitioner. In December, he took her to the emergency department at Mass General. She enrolled in a day program for women and infants and showed up as scheduled, and the providers there sent her home and told him the program wasn't right for her. On New Year's Eve, they went back to Mass General, and she was moved to another hospital at 3 o'clock in the morning. So anybody who's like, well, she didn't put in the work, doesn't know what the F they're talking about. She spent 5 days there in early January. He testified he wasn't getting updates. The prosecutor asked him about group sessions she attended. Sessions she declined, and a request to be discharged early so she could make Cora's birthday party. He didn't know about any of it. Everything he knew about his wife's psychiatric care, he learned from his wife. Sprague asked whether insurance had given them any trouble over that hospital stay. He said he wasn't aware of any issue. Then he added a sentence nobody had asked him for. It wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't have cared either, he said. I would have paid anything, he said. Money was never the problem. He'd set aside a fund so she could take extra leave whenever she needed it. The problem was that 13 separate prescriptions by the defense's count went out from psychiatrists, nurse practitioners, emergency room doctors, and inpatient staff, and her own civil suit alleges that none of them ever had the complete picture. Buckingham told that jury this case was about this defendant, not about how the medical system treats women. Then her office spent that afternoon walking its first witness through 4 months of how the medical system treated a woman. These are great prosecutors, aren't they? Jesus Christ. The judge ended the day early, right as prosecutors looked ready to play the 911 call Patrick made when he got home. That's where his testimony resumes. The Commonwealth will walk him through what he found in that house in the same room as the woman he was married to. You can't stand up in front of a jury, declare a subject off limits, and then build your entire afternoon out of it. The Plymouth County District Attorney's Office picked a frame the evidence won't carry, and they picked it in front of 12 women who are going to spend the next 2 months hearing about prescription counts and 7-minute appointments. And that sentence the state pulled out of him? He said his wife seemed to be having one of her best days. The Commonwealth will argue that's a woman thinking clearly and making a choice. The defense will argue that's the entire problem, that this illness doesn't arrive with a warning label attached. 2 months of expert testimony are going to turn on one sentence spoken by a man who loved every single person in that house. The last thing those jurors hear before they went home was Patrick Clancy describing the end of an ordinary evening. He came up from the basement, held Callan for a minute, and rocked him on his knees. Dawson was on the couch eating chicken nuggets out of a bowl. He kissed Cora on the head, and he told them he'd be right back. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We will continue to break this down as it continues to go on. If you want to hear audio of the trial every day, we got it for you on our podcast channel. We welcome you to check that out. The link is right there if you're watching us on YouTube. Go check out the podcast, press subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. That link will take you to a link tree that will take you to whatever podcast platform you use, and you can get our podcasts there, and you can take us with you on the go. So please do check that out there. We do appreciate that. And you can listen to the trial every day, bring you the audio as it happens. Until next time, my name's Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.